Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Democrat Jack Franks, Republican Nick Tzitzon, and writer Carol Felsenthal. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Sirius XM Studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Well, if you were worried about whether or not the federal government was going to keep operating, yes, it will. The Senate this afternoon approved $446.8 billion in spending, their budget. It'll keep the government moving, the federal government moving, until September 30th, which is the end of the fiscal year. So you need not worry about that. And that was one of the big pieces that needed to be resolved by the Senate. And, of course, they will now go back to their ongoing battle over health care and health care reform. And that'll be one of the topics that we'll talk about as the program unfolds this evening. But our first topic tonight is going to be Barack Obama and the speech that he gave last week in accepting the Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo, Norway. As you will recall, when it was announced several weeks ago that the president was going to get the Nobel Peace Prize, everybody was, even some of his supporters, were kind of raising their eyebrows, wondering, was it a little bit premature for a president in his first term, literally within weeks after being elected president of the United States, being given, you know, one of the highest, you know, honors in the world. And yet, when the speech was given, there has been some interesting reaction to it, and we want to get your reaction to it. It will be one of our topics this evening, because in Oslo, although many people believe Barack Obama to be this sort of bleeding heart, one-worlder, and they were wondering perhaps how many times he would use the word peace, how often could he sneak that into the Peace Prize. Again, a lot of conservatives perhaps expecting that he was going to use an international platform to maybe apologize for some of the past foreign policy mistakes of the United States. I think perhaps they were pleasantly surprised, and we want to get your reaction to it. Here are some of the things that the president had to say. First of all, quote, "We must begin by acknowledging the hard truth that we will not eradicate violent conflict in our lifetimes. There will be times when nations acting individually or in concert will find the use of force not only necessary, but morally justified." He continued, "Evil does exist in the world. A nonviolent movement could not have halted Hitler's armies. Negotiations cannot convince Al-Qaeda's leaders to lay down their arms. To say that force is sometimes necessary is not a call to cynicism. It is a recognition of history, the imperfections of man, and the limits of reason." And finally, "Whatever mistakes we have made, the plain fact is this. The United States of America has helped underwrite global security for more than six decades with the blood of our citizens and the strength of our arms." End of quote. 1-800-723-8289. I want to get your reaction to that. But first of all, I want to turn to our Republican tonight, Nick Tzitzon. Nick, you're generally identified as a moderate Republican. Is this about the best speech that you could have thought was going to be uttered by the president?
Well, Bruce, I think your production staff has made a mistake. It sounds like they accidentally pulled content from a George W. Bush address, which actually was Newt Gingrich's reaction to this speech. And Newt Gingrich, whatever you think of his politics, is one of the smartest people in the Republican Party. And he called it a real noteworthy speech, a historic speech, I believe, was his quote, because the themes in that address were representative of many of the same core elements of George W. Bush's foreign policy. I'll say this. I think the president is enormously fortunate that the Nobel Prize isn't awarded in the same fashion as the Academy Award, where you show up uncertain whether or not you've won. In this case, president had the benefit of weeks and weeks of reaction, not just from his political critics, but from the American people who expressed real curiosity about this.
Jack Franks is with us. He is our Democrat tonight. He is a Democrat, but he represents a rural conservative area. So you're more of a conservative Democrat. Right. Were you cheering with these words, and did they make you smile?
I thought he did an excellent job, and I think he sent the right message. It was almost Clausewitzian in how he was responding, you know, where war is just another extension of politics. And I saw that as a realistic view of the world. And in all due respect to Nick, Bush couldn't give this speech because nobody would trust him. You know, our stance in the entire world was so low under George Bush. I think Obama sends a real hope, and people like us again. They want to work with us again. They want to trust us again. And I think he was telling people the truth as he saw it, and I think he really raised our bar where we needed to be.
Carol Felsenthal also joins us, one of the country's leading freelance writers. Carol, in your view, does this further elevate Barack Obama on the world stage and maybe give him an opportunity to do things that prior presidents could not do?
Well, you know, first of all, Sarah Palin also praised the speech, which I found fascinating. Not only Newt Gingrich, but Sarah Palin. Mm-hmm. And the first third of the speech, I would say, if you looked at the reaction of the people in the audience, they were, you know, kind of dumbfounded by it because it wasn't—
Underwhelmed.
Yes, and it wasn't the speech that they wanted to hear. In fact, Barack Obama, in the course of a week, as I was watching the beginning of the speech, I was thinking when he went to West Point, he received an underwhelming reaction from the cadets, who I believe broke into applause only one time. But I thought it was a fabulous speech. I thought it was exquisitely, beautifully crafted and written. And I think he had those weeks to get his speechwriters to write a speech that would essentially change the conversation, to get him away from this tendency that he has to apologize and to show guilt at the behavior of America and its leaders and its military in decades past. So I thought it was a home run speech for him, and the citizens of the world will accept it very well because I think they knew that politically it was a speech that he had to give.
Nick?
You know, it's an interesting dynamic that's developing, Bruce, to your point. You know, the reaction to this speech from people who you would traditionally consider to be prime allies of the president on the political left was somewhat muted. Our Massachusetts listeners tonight will appreciate there's a ongoing Senate race there for Ted Kennedy's old Senate seat. Mm-hmm. The Republican nominee for that Senate seat is Scott Brown, a state senator. The Democrat is the state's attorney general, Martha Coakley. Scott Brown, the Republican, both had kind things to say, if memory serves, about the speech and approves the president's handling in Afghanistan. The same is not true for the Democrat in that race, Martha Coakley. So it's interesting how on foreign policy and international affairs, the president seems to be making some unusual friends.
Does he, however, in giving this speech, does he really basically position himself not only for the 2010 elections when he's going to be campaigning for many Democrats, but also does it set the stage for 2012 in that in the area of foreign policy, national defense, where Democrats traditionally have felt weak, he is going to be viewed as strong, and yet he's going to be able to go out and do a lot of the programs that a lot of Republicans view as socialistic in nature. I want to get everybody's reaction to that. Is he walking the perfect line to re-election and also the perfect line to governing the country? I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Announcing the Ally Bank online savings account with the rate that's among the most competitive in the country. If you're waiting for the terms and conditions, forget about it. It really is that straightforward. Nothing confusing, hazy, ambiguous, dubious, or dodgy. No double dealing, double speak, or double meanings. Just an online savings account with a great rate. Compare rates for yourself at allybank.com or call Ally at 877-247-ALLY. Ally, straightforward. Member FDIC.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
I need pain relief that won't mess with my grip.
The new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator. Powerful, targeted, long-lasting pain relief now in a roll-on applicator. No mess. Just maximum strength medicine for back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. Massages in icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away.
Wherever I hurt, wherever I go.
Stop pain right at the source with the new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator.
No pain, no mess.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
From Bakersfield, California to Youngstown, Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. We're talking about Barack Obama's speech and accepting the Nobel Peace Prize. And I would like to ask everyone who considers themselves a card-carrying conservative, we probably have a very large conservative audience, as most talk radio does, and usually you're calling and you're ragging on the president. You're beating him up pretty badly on differences with his policies insofar as health care and a variety of other issues that you may even view as socialistic. I want to find out whether you have the ability to call up tonight and say that maybe you agree with Barack Obama on this point. Maybe you were cheering. Or can you call up and can you admit that you really can't get beyond your dislike for the man to give him an acknowledgement if he's done something that you agree with? I'd really like to find out, what is the real depth, how far you can go if you disagree with the President of the United States. And Carol, you have been certainly critical. You are not a member of the journalistic community who is a knee-jerk fan. You do not, worship at the altar of Barack Obama, but you saw some real growth in Oslo.
I did. I thought watching his Afghanistan speech at West Point, there were too many times he used the word I, and I thought that it was a weak speech, not presented well. The Oslo speech, I thought I could watch this slight man who has aged perceptibly since he's been in office. He seems, especially when you see him next to Michelle, he seems to be almost shrinking. And I saw him growing. I saw him gaining stature. I saw him standing up for the country and for our moral center. And I thought it was a speech that will get him a lot. And I would bet that his political people, like Valerie Jarrett and particularly like Rahm Emanuel, were involved up to their earlobes in working
Emanuel a lot, yeah.
Yes, and working with his speechwriters to make sure that the tone is right. And whatever critics are out there, I mentioned David Obey before, the congressman, I do believe that they are so far out on the fringe that it doesn't matter.
Jack Franks.
I think we saw the leader of the free world acting like the leader of the free world, which we hadn't seen in a long time. And people really wanted to get behind him. And I think this will go a long way in putting the Obama stamp on where we're going with our foreign policy. And I think that's been really the strength of his administration so far. You look what he and Hillary Clinton have been able to accomplish. I think we've rebuilt much of the face that we had lost under the prior administration.
But does it mean that if he wants to reach out to allies and he asks them for more troops, they're going to give him more troops? I mean, all the things that, because for the last year, I mean, he's been this darling on the world stage, and wherever he's gone and whatever he's asked for, he hasn't walked away with many victories.
Right.
Does this change things in some way?
I think it makes it easier because all politics is local. Is the Spanish president going to send people again? It depends how it's going to affect his numbers at home. But I think it makes it easier for the sell if we have a real clear policy.
Nick.
I think it goes to the results issue here, Bruce. I mean, the president I consider to be, when it comes to unifying the country and changing the nature of the politics as was promised during the campaign, I consider to be up to date a failure. Now, this speech represents, as Jack was saying and as Carol has said, an effort with regards to foreign policy, with regards to international affairs, to find a line that Americans can get behind. I'm very curious to see if conservative listeners will call in and lend some credence to that. That's progress that he's not been able to make with regards to the political tone here at home.
Let's go to Jim in South Elgin, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. Do you
good
give
evening.
The president any can you acknowledge that the president maybe did a good job in Oslo last week?
No, I wouldn't. I think the whole reason for him getting this award was a sham anyway. But the cap-and-trade issue of nothing
But you think it's a sham. I said at the beginning of the program, I think there were a lot of people, left of center and right of center, that would have agreed with that.
Right.
He did accept it. Now, what about the words he uttered, Jim?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I didn't hear much of his speech. I just don't think it had much, to do it. But you talked about some of his positions, And the thing that should concern everybody, for example, is this cap and trade deal, where the EPA now is going to basically tell a legislative body if they don't pass a bill, they're going to legislate, you know, via fiat. And I think it's dangerous. And I think that anybody who believes in global warming and carbon dioxide being a greenhouse gas, they can reduce their footprint.
So this is your pet issue. But again, you've acknowledged, Jim, that you feel so strongly about cap and trade and global warming, you will not even listen to what he utters on another issue of national security that includes the image of the United States.
Well,
so you're acknowledging your unwillingness ever to take him seriously.
Well, I think you have to look at what he's done so far and the people he surrounds himself with. I mean, he can say anything he wants, but what he does are two separate things. You know, and that's the issue. I mean, look at all these czars he's got in here, this school czar that's a big, you know, believes in all this unusual, you know, activity, adult activity, for example, and all these other people that have been drummed out of there, you know, and these people are bad people he surrounds himself with.
Carol's got a comment.
First of all, just to go back to Jack's comments before, he helped Gordon Brown. Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister of England, has been a very important actor on the world stage. He is likely to be defeated by the Conservative Party candidate this spring, and yet he has been a strong supporter of Afghanistan. And even though there have been some protocol issues between Obama and Brown, some crummy gifts given by Obama to Brown, I thought that speech helped Gordon Brown and leaders like him around the world. I also think that Obama, by mentioning Gandhi and Martin Luther King during the speech and saying, "I can't begin to compare myself to these great figures of history," and also saying that he didn't, that it was too early for him to win this prize, took a lemon, which was the granting of the Nobel Prize. I thought it made Obama and the Nobel Committee look really silly, but turned it into lemonade. I thought he did a remarkably good job, and I think you're going to look back at the first year of his presidency.
Well,
this will be a highlight.
He also said when he was referring to King and Gandhi, he said their moral authority and the great things that they did alone was not making the world a better place. That there has to be, you know, there has to be use of might at some point,
right?
Because of the evil in the world. Nick, to you, and then another call.
I want to go back to Jack's point. I think we're all agreeing with Jack on this. All politics is, in fact, local. And Jim's call really underscores the trouble that the president has, Bruce. You know, the speech was a good moment for the president. I think the themes that he emphasized were the right themes. I agree with everything that's been said about that. But there is a strong and growing portion of the American population that cannot get past some of these domestic issues on which they do not agree with the president and his administration. And until he clarifies, improves, and rectifies that problem, I think he's going to have limited credit awarded to him on any progress that he makes articulating a good foreign policy for
the United
States.
And it's also very difficult because many of these people are urged and egged on every day by those in the media, whether
right.
it is on talk radio or on cable television, who for political reasons and rating reasons, they cannot acknowledge he could come up with a cure for cancer, and they're not going to give him his due for that.
Correct.
Jack.
I agree 100%, and I'm really concerned about the partisan nature. You know, we really have a crisis in this country on a number of levels, and we ought to be working together. And what I see is how it's been going on for a long time, unfortunately, are those who want to make political points and not work with the administration. It's easy to say no, but it's very difficult to come up with new answers. And we heard from the first caller, and hopefully he's not indicative of everyone who disagrees with some of the policies of the president. But if he does, I can see how difficult it's going to be to move forward in the next few years.
Let's head to Austin, Texas. Sam is listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, I can't help but applaud anybody who references the United States in a positive way throughout the world and uses the moral authority that we've conveyed through history, not in all aspects of our actions as a nation, but I would guess that the majority of what we've done has been for the good causes. I mean, we weren't a superpower until World War II, so we didn't really weren't a world player other than impacting on an economic basis. But about Obama, I credit him for saying those things, but the part, you know, name me one other Democrat that would say the same thing. And I was also thinking about it while I was on hold here, was that he was sort of forced into that situation. I mean, the number of times he's going out on stage, you know, moral, you know, center of our policies and whatnot.
We're losing. I think we're on a bad sell here. But again, I want to just ask Jack. You know, in the primary, if Hillary Clinton had been elected and Hillary Clinton had won a similar award, I can't see or hear her saying much different than what Barack Obama said.
No.
Because he was to her left.
I agree. I think he's come to the center on this issue. Certainly, he didn't campaign this way. But I think he's governing much more in the center. And I think hopefully Hillary had something to do with that. I'm sure she was counseling him in this on his speech as well. But it sounded like her up there.
Well, also, I think the other reality, which I said a couple of weeks ago on the program, and that is, you know, it is a lot easier to run for president of the United States than to sit there and see the reports and know all of the information, all the intelligence. And then have to sort it out once you are the president of the United States. Because the ramifications when you're running for office, they may lose you a primary. You screw up when you're the president of the United States, there could be tens of thousands of lives lost. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. Tonight we're talking about the president's speech in Oslo last week. Can you, as a card-carrying conservative Republican, if you are, can you give him any props for that speech? I'm Bruce Dumont.
Look, I can tell you all the ins and outs of car insurance, but sometimes GEICO surprises even me. Like when it comes to paying your premium. They can automatically debit your checking account or charge your credit card. It's easy, paperless, and I suspect magic. I don't know how they do it. I mean, I know how GEICO can help save you hundreds on car insurance, but all that electronic stuff, poof, off it goes and you're all good.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
I need pain relief that won't mess with my grip.
The new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator. Powerful, targeted, long-lasting pain relief now in a roll-on applicator. No mess. Just maximum strength medicine for back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. Massages in icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away.
Wherever I hurt, wherever I go.
Stop pain right at the source with the new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator.
No pain, no mess.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
From Austin, Texas to Spokane, Washington, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029, taking America's political pulse tonight, talking about President Obama's speech last week in Oslo, Norway, getting reaction from those around the country and those around the table here in Chicago. And our Democrat tonight is Jack Franks. He is a veteran Illinois state representative, and he represents a conservative area, McHenry County, and some of the great cities, including
we have
Woodstock,
McHenry, Marengo, Harvard, Johnsburg.
And also joining us this evening is Nick Zitzen. Nick is with a company called Dykema. That is a law firm, and he represents clients who are interested in federal policy-related matters. Once upon a time, he worked for the United States Justice Department. He was also an assistant to Tommy Thompson when he was the head of the HHS, and also, once upon a time, was the political director of the Massachusetts Republican Party. He hails from Massachusetts, where he was once an aide not only to Mitt Romney, but also to Paul Carlucci. And also joining us this evening is Carol Felsenthal. She is a contributing editor of Chicago Magazine. She wrote the book Clinton in Exile, A President Out of the White House. And also she writes for the Huffington Post. And your latest blog is on Chris Matthews.
Chris Matthews.
Now, what did he do to warrant your ire, probably?
Well, I find Chris Matthews to be unceasingly interesting because he does not hide his partisanship at all. He doesn't let his guests talk. He doesn't stop talking. He actually, the spittle comes out when he gets exercised on a particular subject.
And you like this.
I think he's fascinating, but he has very low ratings, but I find him interesting. I watch him all the time. So he has two writers on, Susan Page from USA Today and Jonathan Martin of the Politico, which has come out of nowhere to be a really influential online publication. And Chris Matthews is saying to them, isn't it terrible that at the Gridiron Dinner, where Sarah Palin appeared and gave a very funny routine and even seemed to be butting up to Barney Frank, believe it or not, and being, you know, she got quite a good reception, Chris Matthews going after her for not writing her own jokes and saying to Paige and Martin, this is outlandish, outrageous, and then going after Sarah Palin for not writing her own autobiography. And I was waiting for these two journalists to say, wait a minute, no politician, including Bill Clinton, including Ted Kennedy in his posthumously published book, they all have help. And no politician goes to the Gridiron Club without a professional, maybe somebody who writes for Letterman.
Right.
And nobody mentioned I. So I get so, you know, exercised over this. So I just ran and I've gotten a lot of response to that.
How is on the subject of Sarah Palin, in your view, I don't know with you, how many you know, TV appearances you've seen thus far, Nick? How is Sarah Palin doing back in the spotlight with her book, in your view, right now?
I tell you, I think she's made one smart decision in this rollout, Bruce, and that's to focus on, you know, the personal nature of her own story and the relation to her background and how it fits into her politics. I think that she's at her worst and has been historically on the national stage when she focuses too much or tries to on the nitty-gritty details of national policy, whether it's domestic or foreign policy. Her story, on the other hand, is compelling. And whether it was with Oprah or in any other program that she's done so far talking about the book, most of it is about her story. And that's compelling, and I think she's had a good reaction to it.
Jack, if we go back to McHenry, Illinois, and followed you around. Again, you were a Democrat. You also, by the way, you were the Illinois state chairman of Hillary Clinton's campaign. So you're a Democrat from a conservative area. What do your constituents, what do they think of Sarah Palin, and do they talk about her at all with you?
They have, but for the first time, McHenry County, which when I first ran for state representative, it was 76% Republican. Barack Obama won my county. They were not impressed with Sarah Palin, and I don't think they still are impressed with Sarah Palin. We have a very high-educated area in my county, and she's not well-received.
They like John McCain?
No. I mean, Barack Obama won my county. What does that tell you?
Yeah.
There's one more point I'd make about Sarah Palin, and I made this point before. You know, she is dismissed by many who gave credit to then-Senator Obama for his ability to call out into the political process a big chunk of the voting population that had previously been disaffected. And I think Sarah Palin makes strides in that same exact area. She's bringing people out with high degrees of enthusiasm who maybe have been disenchanted. Just because we happen to disagree with those people on some issues doesn't make them any less important.
Does her positive comment about the president's speech in Oslo, does that represent a maturing of Sarah Palin?
I think it does. I think it does. But I still don't think she's taken that seriously, because of her weak resume. And I don't know where she's going to be in 2012.
Do you think she watched the Senate? I think she did it for political reasons. Also, the reason that her tour has been so successful is that she didn't go to Los Angeles and New York and Chicago. She went to Grand Rapids and Indianapolis. And
She went to her markets.
Right. It was really smart.
Very smart. Speaking of that, let's go to Dave listening to us in Salem, Oregon. Always nice to hear from Oregon. Listening to us on KGAL. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I just wanted to say about Obama's speech, I actually agreed with parts of it in the beginning, up until the point when he started to say, he inferred that Iraq was an unjust war. And I felt like he started pandering back and backpedaling. And as a conservative, like I said, I appreciated the beginnings of the speech, but after that, I realized he was just saying it. I don't, you know, maybe if he keeps it up, but if the guy says it one time, I'm not going to believe him. He's got to prove it.
Yeah, okay, well, good point.
I think that is a good point. And I think the thing to remember is that this was not a press conference where he was talking extemporaneously. This was a very carefully crafted, rehearsed speech. Right. And I think he wanted to hit bases, and I think that's why I didn't. I think if he gave this speech 3 months earlier or 6 months earlier, it would have been a very different speech.
Let's go to Dick in Spokane, Washington, listening to us on KXLY, one of our oldest affiliates. Go ahead.
Thank you very, very much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And as I'm listening to this, and I watched a little bit of the Oslo deal, and I remember I'm looking at George Bush Jr. Here. I'm comparing him. And George Bush Jr. gave a lot of us I'm not conservative. I'm a little more constitutional. Mm-hmm. But George Bush Jr. gave us a half-constructed Border Patrol wall, two federal agents in jail, and then gave us a standing army amongst the people. It was called Homeland Security. And that's in violation of the Constitution. And I'm taking a look at Barack Obama. How do you get a peace prize for sending 30,000 more troops? I'm a combat Vietnam veteran, in fact, a disabled one. But anyway, how do you get a peace prize for sending 30,000 more troops? This looks to me like nothing but a sham. I'm watching what they do. I'm not listening to a thing they say, and I'm not seeing a difference between either. And as far as Sarah Palin goes, I was up here in that line at Fred Meyer's in Idaho that got there the night before to see her. And it's a nice condescending remark about how intelligent your area is that wouldn't go for Sarah. But I'm telling you something. You can't ignore her. She's there, and I believe in her. Thank you very, very much.
Stay on the line. We want to kind of respond to a number of the things that you had to say. First of all, Jack, we'll let you.
I think by the president saying he's going to put 30,000 troops in Afghanistan, I think he's trying to fix the errors of the gang that couldn't shoot straight, the gang that should have been shooting for Afghanistan and instead shot at Iraq. That was the original problem, and that's where we should have been focusing our resources. And I think he's doing the right thing now. I mean, Sarah Palin appeals to a certain group of folks, and I'm not going to deny that. I'm just not sure how seriously she's going to be taken when it comes to 2012.
Do you, again, looking at from a political standpoint, what did the receipt of the Peace Prize do for him politically? What's everybody's reaction to before we know it? We've been talking about the speech, but initially, when the word came out that he was going to get the Nobel Peace Prize, I didn't see that as a big political plus for him. Did anybody?
It made him look foolish. I also think
it made
that
them look foolish.
It made them look foolish, but he was reflected in it, and it made him seem like he was overreaching and he was just like an ingenue. I thought it was bad for Obama. I also think that if he had given the speech about sending 30,000 troops to Afghanistan before they did their deliberations, I don't think he would have gotten the Nobel Peace Prize. They didn't know that.
No, they didn't. Dick, do you agree with that?
No, I think that it was a strong parallel to the original discussion about whether or not Barack Obama was in fact qualified and ready to be president. I mean, that same type of dynamic when he was announced as the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. What has he done to earn it? What has he done to demonstrate that he's on a level playing field with some of the real titans in history that have won this thing?
Dick was calling from Spokane, Washington, and during one of the breaks a couple of about 20 minutes ago, you made the comment, you talked about Scoop Jackson. You talked about a wing of the Democratic Party that used to be hawk-like, that used to be very strong on national security issues. How many people believe in the Democratic Senate right now? How many people were cheering his words? And how big is that caucus in the United States Senate that is excited about but certainly supportive of sending 30,000 more troops? And basically, how many of them would have been cheering this speech, in your view, Nick?
Well,
and then I want to get Dick's response.
I'll answer it slightly off topic. I didn't see Joe Lieberman's reaction to his speech, but I'd be curious. And I think Lieberman's reaction would be very telling to the question that you've posed. Because Lieberman, in the lead-up to the election, obviously a McCain supporter, and for the prime reason of suggesting that he didn't share the president's views when it comes to foreign policy. Does anybody know what Lieberman said?
He didn't. You know, he's been so fixed on health care. He has not been saying much about foreign policy at all.
Hard to believe because I thought Joe Lieberman had an opinion on everything.
Yeah, I don't know about John.
Drop a hat,
I
have an opinion on it. Back shortly, 1-800. We do have to move on. Sorry about that, Dick. 1-800-723-8029. Take America's political pulse. From coast to coast and border to border on America's great radio stations, as well as Sirius and XM satellite radio. I'm Bruce Dumont, back soon from Chicago.
Announcing the Ally Bank online savings account with a rate that's among the most competitive in the country. If you're waiting for the terms and conditions, forget about it. It really is that straightforward. Nothing confusing, hazy, ambiguous, dubious, or dodgy. No double dealing, double speak, or double meanings. Just an online savings account with a great rate. Compare rates for yourself at allybank.com or call Ally at 877-247-ALLY. Ally, straightforward, member FDIC.
It's quite a proposition when you think about it. You contact GEICO and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. 15 minutes, simple as that. Something they've been doing for over 70 years. You want car insurance and you want extra money in your wallet, done and done. Now, not only do you have some nice car insurance, you've got plenty of money to spend on some tasty biscuits. Or flowers for your mum. Or whatever it is you fancy.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, 1-800-723-8289. Let's go to Ed listening to us in Cleveland, Ohio, on our flagship station, WLS. Nice to hear from Cleveland tonight.
Oh, hi. Thanks, everybody. I think what we have here is the president burning both ends of the political candle, appeasing the Democrats by telling them it's an unjust war, and keep bombing and sending troops for the warmonger Republicans to make them feel proud. Actually, I think we have it's quite an insult here. He should have been, pardon me, in Hawaii, December 7th, Pearl Harbor. You know, what an insult to the world, to our World War II veterans. And I'm sick of the diatribe, the boogeyman, Al-Qaeda. And he mentioned in his speech that you can't negotiate with Al-Qaeda. Has anyone tried to negotiate? No, we don't want to negotiate. When you represent corporations, wars.
Where would you begin, sir? Where would you begin to negotiate with Al-Qaeda?
Well, here, where would you begin?
Yeah, that's my question.
That's sort of a loaded question. I mean, where?
Well, yeah,
that's
why I asked it.
Who is Al-Qaeda?
Al-Qaeda is a worldwide terrorist organization that has already demonstrated that one of their principal goals is to kill Americans.
Oh, really? So that gives you the reason to drop B-52 bombs as we're speaking, indiscriminately.
Yes.
Our troops are kicking doors in.
Yeah, I would say that anything that the United States is doing to root out those who represent terrorism and terrorist threats against the United States and our allies and free people of the world, who have done nothing. Yes, I think you do whatever you need to do to get them.
Our little gangbanger, Israel.
Sir, thanks very much for calling. I thought it was nice to hear from Cleveland, but I'm not sure. Let's go to Paul in South Bend, Indiana. Let's see what voice of reason we have in South Bend tonight. Go ahead, Paul.
Hi, Bruce. The first part of President Obama's speech was good. He hit some right notes, but I wish that he would have stressed that what was missing, that the U.S. military is the greatest force for peace and stability in the world, why we need strong, committed allies who can take casualties, and if the U.S. doesn't rule the world and protect the world, someone far worse will. And I wish he could have told, you know, the story of our retreat of Vietnam as compared to South Korea. South Korea is a thriving, free, open democracy now. And when we left Vietnam, somewhere between a million and a half and 3 million Southeast Asians were slaughtered. And one more thing. Some of your panel keep going back to President Bush and Iraq, an unjust war. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, President Bush came to office. He didn't want to be a wartime president. He was following Clinton's policy of trying to unseat Saddam Hussein. Clinton had the same policy. What people don't realize is that when Tommy Franks, 6 months before the invasion, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Oman, the Emirates, Jordan, Lebanon, and Egypt asked Tommy Franks to relay the message to President Bush that Saddam Hussein was a threat to the stability of the Middle East and needed to be removed, and that Saddam was funding Al-Qaeda to train Ansar al-Islam. Unjust war, just war, who knows?
Well, Jack Franks has a comment on it, and I know that Carol does as well. Jack.
Paul, you know, there's 50% of Americans who still think that Saddam Hussein had something to do with the bombing on 9/11. Nothing could be further from the truth. He didn't want al-Qaeda in Iraq because it could destabilize his country. So we need to talk about facts here, and I think this is fantasy, what you're talking about, and you're still blaming President Clinton for these type of things. Let's deal with the problems at hand.
No, but what I think he is saying is that it was the policy of the Clinton administration for regime change in Iraq. That was true. The first things that were uttered by George Bush about going into Iraq were about regime change. Weapons of mass destruction came a little bit later. You may remember in the debate.
I do remember that, but I don't think it was necessary. I mean, I think he was trying to avenge his father when, you know, he tried to kill him. I don't really think that this was a just war in that sense. Because
that's really bizarre if that was his only rationale.
Yeah, I don't see it.
You were making a comment about Tony Blair, who recently said basically if he knew everything he knew right now, he'd still support the war in Iraq.
One of the very interesting things about Tony Blair to me is he was quite close to Bill Clinton, and they were often compared, these young baby boomers who had enormous charisma and enormous ability to lead and to draw people with them. Well, Tony Blair gave an interview this weekend, I believe, in which he said that had he known there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, he still would have supported the regime change because he feels that Saddam Hussein, and believes it today, that Saddam Hussein was such a destabilizing and dangerous factor in the entire region. And I think that's interesting. I also always found it interesting that Tony Blair was such a strong ally and supporter and admirer of George W. Bush. I've always found that really interesting. He really liked the guy and saw something between those ears that we tend to think that George W. Bush is kind of dumb. Tony Blair didn't think that.
No, I think he saw him as a man who looked at the reports that were before him and had the backbone to stand up and do something that was very unpopular. And he still is unpopular because of it.
Let me make this point. Jack, you know, we could talk about the Iraq war for the entire show, and we can talk about, you know, the legitimacy of arguments leading up to it. But one thing is true in the context of this Nobel Peace Prize. Diplomacy is everyone's first choice.
Sure.
And in the case of Saddam Hussein, how often can we watch, or should we have watched, somebody thumb their nose at UN Security Council resolutions, which make the very exercise of diplomacy less effective? I support the Iraq war for that reason and many others, but without diplomacy and without meaningful diplomacy, you can't have world peace.
But what about North Korea? If that was really a bigger threat to us at that time, and we ignored it for a multitude of reasons.
Track record. How many Security Council resolutions can you ignore?
When we come back, and we will be back, we're going to continue this discussion as well as other issues. For those joining us in hour number one, we've had Jack Franks has been with us. Carol Felsenthal has been with us. Nick Zitzen has been with us. They were so good, they'll all be back for the second hour. If you're listening to us on radio, and if you're watching us on television, we will see you next week.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
OnStar emergency. I need an ambulance. Yes, ma'am. I'm contacting the 911 center.
911.
This is OnStar emergency. I have an accident with airbag deployment. She's requesting a medic. South Las Vegas Boulevard, just before the Interstate 215. Ma'am, I have 911 on the line.
I'm going to get you some help right away. Just hang tight.
Something's wrong with my hand.
You think you might have a broken hand?
Yeah. Can I get someone to call my mom, please? Okay, I'm going to get her on the line for you.
With built-in automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can use GPS technology to locate you and share crash details, which could help save your life.
I have your mother on the line. What's wrong? What happened? It's okay, ma'am. We're taking her to the hospital. Everyone's on scene.
Okay, thank you.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
Nowadays, when I talk with folks, they know GEICO could save them hundreds on their car insurance. But what they want to know is how GEICO does it. Well, I say, we got tons of great discounts, like good driver discounts, multi-car discounts. And they say, there's no secret formula. And I say, nah, it's just what we do. And then sometimes they say, maybe a talking gecko's a secret. Well, I wouldn't know what to say about that.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
I need pain relief that won't mess with my grip.
The new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator. Powerful, targeted, long-lasting pain relief now in a roll-on applicator. No mess. Just maximum strength medicine for back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. Massages in icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away.
Wherever I hurt, wherever I go.
Stop pain right at the source with the new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator.
No pain, no mess.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
Announcing the Ally Bank online savings account with a rate that's among the most competitive in the country. If you're waiting for the terms and conditions, forget about it. It really is that straightforward. Nothing confusing, hazy, ambiguous, dubious, or dodgy. No double dealing, double speak, or double meanings. Just an online savings account with a great rate. Compare rates for yourself at allybank.com or call Ally at 877-247-ALLY. Ally, straightforward. Member FDIC.
Why do cold temperatures make for such warm memories? Find out at REI. We have all the latest gear, cold weather clothing, and advice to help you make the most of this winter and holiday season. With a wide selection of gear and apparel for camping, cycling, hiking, skiing, and snowboarding, we'll help you and your family and friends get outside and make some fun winter memories. You'll find plenty of great gift ideas, too. As always, everything is backed by our 100% satisfaction guarantee. Visit your local REI store or REI.com. REI. Find out.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Democrat Jack Franks, Republican Nick Zitzen, and author and writer Carol Felsenthal. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the SiriusXM studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. And in this hour of our broadcast, we're going to be talking a little bit about health care. We're going to be talking about jobs, whether or not the government can really create jobs. And most importantly, in fact, we're going to kind of begin our discussion on an issue that we talk about periodically on this program. We don't spend an awful lot of time on it. It's an issue that not only pops up its head not at the state government level, regardless of what state you live in, listening and watching this broadcast every Sunday night, but also certainly at the national level, and that is the issue of ethics. With all of the problems we've had and ethical lapses at all levels of government over the last several years, highly publicized, is the level of morality, is the level of ethics any better today than it was 5 years ago? Are we attracting a higher quality or a lower quality of elected officials and people running for political office? And how do you as a voter, how do you separate yourself from a public servant who really wants to do well and represent you from someone who really represents only themselves? And Jack Franks, so you are a Democrat tonight. We should mention for those listening around the country, certainly the former governor of Illinois is very well known and notorious now, Rod Blagojevich, because of his indictment. You were one of his leading critics long before it was fashionable. So let me first of all ask the broad question, and you swim in the politics of Illinois, which is known nationally as not the cleanest of waters.
Right.
Do you believe things are better today than they were 1, 3, or 5 years ago?
Unfortunately, not much, because the same people who were making the decisions before are still there making the decisions now. We've had some fallout. About a year ago, Blagojevich was arrested, and we strengthened some of our laws, our FOIA laws, for instance, and some other ethics laws. But by and large, the same players who were benefiting from the corrupt practices are still plying their trade, I really think we need more wholesale change. And, you know, Illinois has more federal agents right now investigating corruption than any other state. And, you know, corruption corrodes everything. People, whether it be school admissions or how people get jobs or contracts, it really erodes the public confidence. And I think it makes a lot of people apathetic and cynical about their government. So I think we've started to make some change, but we have a much longer way to
Where is the political will, however? Because you can go into the editorial boards of newspapers. Primarily the Chicago Tribune has been on a real focused hunt to root out corruption and create an ethical Illinois. But where are the public? I mean, where is the outrage for the public? Because it seems to me that if it was really there, maybe there would be change. But it's not really there.
I don't feel it. And I just gave a speech this last week in Scottsdale to an international organization. And I was going through all the things that Rod Blagojevich did. And most of the things that we talked about, the things that he was impeached upon, were things that he did before he was reelected in 2006. And instead, people reelected him because, you know, he had a catchy slogan. He was able to denigrate his opponent. And people didn't do the research they needed to. And I think people were just sick and tired of what's going on in politics. So we need more grassroots effort. We need people to get mad. We need them to throw some of us out of office, quite frankly, and to reclaim our government.
From a Republican perspective, is this one of these issues that people talk about but they really don't care about it?
I don't know that they don't care. I mean, I think if you asked anybody on the street, any voter, whether or not they participate in the political process, they'll say that they want and desire an ethical government. You know, I think two things have happened. I think this is true, you know, at the federal level and at the state level as well to some extent. Government itself has continued to grow and become more complex, and our politics continues to, operate in a system that's confusing to a lot of people. And I think that level of confusion that exists both in public policy and in politics, frankly, Bruce, intimidates a lot of good people out of the process. I think they're less likely to want to run for office. I think they're less likely to pay attention and read complex stories about what's
happening.
Doesn't
the average person believe, however, that all politicians do it? I mean, all politicians are out there only for themselves. I mean, I was at a social gathering about 3 nights ago, and the person said, you know, why is everybody picking on Rod Blagojevich? Did Rod Blagojevich do anything worse than anybody else? I'd like to be on his jury. They wanted to be on his jury to let him off.
Well, I think the consistent adage, right, is that the sins of the few drown out the positive accomplishments of the many. I mean, it's not good news. It's not sexy to profile somebody like Jack Franks, who's a good guy, who's honest, who does a good job. It's sexy to profile Rod Blagojevich because he's a scoundrel. And I think, you know, the American people, for better or worse, watch programs like, you know, Jon Stewart's Daily Show, where Stewart takes apart politicians who, frankly, you know, don't have their act together in the first place, and that just contributes to the perception.
Carol Felsenthal also joins us, one of the country's leading freelance writers, and she covers politics as well as cultural and media issues. Let's talk about the media. I mean, the role, 60 Minutes is the most popular television show probably of all time, certainly of a news magazine. If you watch that show year in and year out, it's now, I believe, over 25, 27 years it's been on the air. I mean, two-thirds of that story are about corrupt people doing something wrong, generally of some public nature. The other thing is if you watch the late-night comedy shows, the shows that America goes to bed with laughing, the level of ridicule, in many cases deserved ridicule, of public officials is rampant. Is there any place in the public culture where good government and people who go into government for good purposes are held up on any pedestal?
You know, what is difficult is to translate that into actual law and actual action. We're here in Chicago. There are still two daily newspapers here. The Chicago Tribune, as you say, went on a tear after the subject of corruption. Number one, people are not reading newspapers as much as they used to. And I also want to mention Carol Marin, a columnist and a TV person, but a columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times that didn't let up on that. So what happened? I'm a news junkie. I get four newspapers every day. I follow this stuff. I wasn't sure what happened in the state legislature. It seemed to me that a guest on this show, John Cullerton, and Mike Madigan, Cullerton, the president of the Senate, Madigan, the speaker of the Illinois House, something went on there so that the ethics law was diluted and drained of meaning. I'm a journalist. I write about that stuff. If somebody assigned me to write about ethics, then I would go and I would pick it apart and I would understand and I'd write about it. But as a news consumer, I'm not sure what happened there.
We've got to be back. 1-800-723-8029 with your calls. We've got them standing by. We'll go to them when we come back.
Since OnStar began, we've answered over 100 million calls for help.
Yeah, I just woke up and my car was stolen.
I hate that you had to call us under these circumstances, but I'll be happy to assist you. Are you in a safe location?
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe this. The car was in the driveway. My wife's car was behind mine. I come out to get the newspaper. Her car's out in the street. So they pushed her car out to get to my car.
Oh, no. Do you have the stolen vehicle report number?
550.
If your car is stolen, OnStar can use GPS technology to help recover it.
Police Department.
I have a location on a stolen vehicle. It's just off of Riddler Brook Court. It's in a subdivision. It's currently stationary.
Thanks, OnStar. We have 3 units going out there.
This is Keith.
This is me, OnStar Center. We have located the vehicle. Police will be contacting you shortly.
Okay, thanks so much.
Stolen vehicle assistance is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
From Worcester, Mass. To Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. We will go to calls in just a moment, but Nick Zitzen, you were making a comment during the break, which should be shared with the audience.
You know, I just want to go back to this whole idea of, you know, sort of politics versus ethics. You know, I think if you did a sort of a random, you know, voter on the street type exercise and you ask them about something like, you know, why there wasn't a special election scheduled to fill, you know, President Obama's Senate seat, or why in Massachusetts there wasn't a special election to fill Ted Kennedy's Senate seat, they're just going to say, it's politics as usual. That's the way it goes. Oh, it's an inside job. And I wonder, Bruce, if you went a step further and asked them to define in their mind what politics as usual was, ethics wouldn't be a word that they used, unethical or somehow compromising of a moral fabric. And I think that's a big part of this too. What people view as politics as usual, they also equate to mean unethical. And I think that's a problem we've got to fix in this country.
But also part of it is that the you know, in politics, it's generally viewed as politicians get contributions from people who like them, who they want to affect in some way. And those lobbyists, who generally have a bad name, they're lobbying for somebody. And many of the people that they're lobbying for, they want them to lobby because their life is being affected. Not every lobbyist is lobbying against, you know, bad subjects. Some of them are doing good lobbying, mm-hmm. But the average person, I think, just sees it all as they're all against us. It's the people who are elected against the people who are unelected.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they forget that the government is them, you know? You know, Girl Scouts don't need lobbyists. You know, everybody's going to be for the Girl Scouts and apple pie and mom and that type of thing. Lobbyists certainly have a function. They provide information. What we normally wouldn't get. We get it from, you know, their point of view. We understand that it's colored. But the fact of the matter is that we need to get more people involved, because I think what we've done here, at least in this state and what I've seen in others, is that people are just so cynical. They don't think that what they do matters. And that's why we have such low voter turnout. Here in Illinois, for instance, we have these municipal elections. In my area, for instance, we have like 16% turnout. And it's a joke, because these are the folks who make your day-to-day decisions at that level, and people just don't want to get involved unless it's a presidential election.
And no political party, at least the major political parties, they don't want to do anything about it.
No.
They want to keep that pool small.
Yeah, well, you know, there were two interesting mayoral races in the last short time. Yesterday in Houston, where the first openly gay woman elected mm-hmm. mayor, and there was a racial element because she was running against an African-American man. And then in Atlanta, where you had a white woman running against an African-American man. They were both very in the African-American one, continuing a long tradition in Atlanta. But what was interesting to me about both those races was the turnout was like in the low 20s. Mm-hmm. And these were feisty, dramatic elections. Also, going to the issue of lobbyists, in the health care debate now, you have Joe Lieberman, an independent, who is he gets huge contributions from Aetna, a private health care company, and yet nobody talks about it. And I think it's just too complicated. Also, the big pharmaceuticals were sitting at the table when the original health care plan was formulated, and whether the plan will end up keeping the promise made to those people, they were there. So, and I think most people just throw up their hands. I don't know what to do about it.
Let's go to Bob in Normal, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I look at this ethical question and I say to myself, if I consider someone ethical, what am I really saying about that person? That person has to have morals. If you have morals, you have to be held accountable. And what are we teaching our children today? If I get a bad grade in school as a child, the parent runs in and talks to the teacher and says, Bobby or Jane or Susie or Tommy should have gotten a better grade. You take a look at what athletes are doing today. Athletes are, you know, getting in trouble at strip clubs, getting in trouble with dogfights, getting in trouble, you know, with affairs, are not being held accountable. What are we doing with our politicians? Are they being held accountable? I don't believe they are. If they're not accountable, they're not going to be ethical. The gentleman from McHenry and Marengo, you know, who talked about his county went the first time for Obama. I'm from Central Illinois, a strong Republican county. The county voted for Obama as well. And I have to ask, you know, what did this individual, the representative, Republican, I believe, from the McHenry area, do to speak out against Obama, or did he simply speak for McCain? You know, and then it really gets into that.
In Jack's particular case, and stay on the line because I want you to engage Jack. In Jack's particular case, he was the state chairman for Hillary Clinton. So he spent time with Barack Obama, knew him, and obviously it wasn't terribly popular to be an elected official in Illinois and not jump on the Obama bandwagon, but Jack did it. And tell us why you did it and what you did during that campaign.
Well, listen, I like Barack very much. He was chairman of state government in the Senate while I was chairman of state government in the House, and we worked on the pharmaceutical issues together. After the first two debates, I was concerned about his readiness to be the leader of the free world. And I met with Hillary Clinton, and she can tell you verse and chapter on who these folks were and who was backing them and why. And I just felt that she could make the world a safer place. That's why I went with Hillary. I know it wasn't politically popular in Illinois, but I thought it was the right thing to do. And I don't regret it for a minute. It was one of my proudest things to work with her. And then I campaigned very strongly for President Obama, you know, after he won the primary because I thought he would do well. But going back to Bob's question, I think we have to stand up no matter who the person is and what party. I was the first person to openly criticize Blagojevich. I went after George Ryan very hard, too. I think we have to police our own, and that's a problem that we have in politics, that oftentimes we turn a blind eye. And you look at what happened to Roland Burris, for instance. He came to our committee. I was a member of the Special Investigative Committee.
This is Roland Burris, who is the junior senator from Illinois, who is the African-American member of the United States Senate.
He had one thing to do to be seated. He had to tell our committee the truth. Now, first of all, I think anyone with any common sense or integrity never would have taken this appointment. But since he wanted it, all he had to do was tell the truth because that's what Reed told him to do. He came to our committee and lied to our face. He was not forthcoming, and yet he was seated anyway. So we tried, for instance, I tried to have an election beforehand, and I was rebuffed. But I think we all have to stand up to these actors because what I see in politics is the people who really think they're entitled. And it's all about them, and they forget who put them there and why they're there. And, you know, maybe we need term limits on leadership. Maybe we need something. But I know what we've got now needs a shakeup.
Joseph in Chicago, you're on WLS. Go ahead. Joseph, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Go ahead.
About this ridicule, listen, we are living in a democracy, and going back 2,400 years ago with Salone, we are privileged to realize that politicians are not gods. And when we realize that, as Salone initiated democracy in Attica, which eventually became Athens, and incidentally, Salone was not in Greek. They think he was a Phoenician, but he spent all his life in Attica. We do not worship the politicians as gods, and one way we do not do so is we are entitled to ridicule them. We don't threaten their lives, but we are entitled to all kinds of ridicule to make sure that they know they are human. And the proof of pudding is that as soon as democracy was invented in Athens, what should appear? The comedies of Aristophanes. If you just pick up any comedy of Aristophanes, it's shocking how he ridicules the politicians. He has them walking around with huge phallic symbols, rubbing the phallic symbols while they're doing the talking, and he is relentless in ridiculing the politicians as demagogues. And here's the key point. The very politician he's ridiculing is in the audience, accepting the ridicule. I mean, they didn't clap in those days, but when they gave praise to the playwright, that very.
But let me ask you a follow up question, if I can, Joseph.
Yes.
If it is, and certainly this, you know, to criticize a politician is one thing, but it seems to me that it's never in context with any member of the political climate who was doing something or committee who's doing something positive.
No, sir. The minute we start doing is we fall into spot our fascism. We don't even have to have context. We can ridicule them as long as we don't threaten their life. This is freedom, my friend.
Okay,
this is
not
fascism. And this goes back with a long tradition.
Sir, you've made your point. Take a breath. Let's let Carol respond.
There's something about him. This is my first time meeting Jack Franks, and I've been very impressed by him tonight. And but there's something about politicians. It rolls off their backs. There have been so many. Blagojevich is one. Roland Burris, a junior U.S. senator from Illinois. These people have no shame, and they get away with it because the American citizens' memory is very short.
We're talking about Illinois,
but now I'm going to bring it into the national realm. When Roland Burris was not going to be seated, Harry Reid and Dick Durbin, the senior senator from Illinois, both said that they weren't going to seat him. They gave the reasons why. They flip-flopped on this so many times, and they just – nobody remembers. Nobody remembers that Durbin and Reid both lied about what they were going to do and then just sought
cover. They were going to do one thing, and then the political reality of the Democratic primary, they were worried that they were going to upset the African-American community.
Right,
and
exactly.
So they caved.
But nobody remembers that.
Well,
so they can go on.
I remember that.
But you
I
remember
think I just
because
rem-
you're a political
I just
because
reminded
you're a
everybody
person,
why it happened.
But most people don't.
1-800-723-8289. Back shortly from Chicago.
Announcing the Ally Bank online savings account with the rate that's among the most competitive in the country. If you're waiting for the terms and conditions, forget about it. It really is that straightforward. Nothing confusing, hazy, ambiguous, dubious, or dodgy. No double dealing, double speak, or double meanings. Just an online savings account with a great rate. Compare rates for yourself at allybank.com or call Ally at 877-247-ALLY. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
It's quite a proposition when you think about it. You contact GEICO and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. 15 minutes, simple as that. Something they've been doing for over 70 years. You want car insurance and you want extra money in your wallet, done and done. Now, not only do you have some nice car insurance, you've got plenty of money to spend on some tasty biscuits. Or flowers for your mum. Or whatever it is you fancy.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
From Rockford, Illinois to Rockville, Maryland, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Jack Franks is here. He is our Democrat. He is a veteran Illinois state lawmaker representing McHenry County, which is in the western rural area of just west of Chicagoland. Nick Zitzen also joins us. He is with an organization called Dykema. That is a law firm. He represents those who are interested in the public policy issues as it relates to Washington, and knows his way around Washington because he was with the Justice Department. He was a special assistant to Tommy Thompson at HHS, and also comes from Massachusetts, where he was born, and once upon a time worked for Governor Mitt Romney and Paul Carlucci there, and was political director of the Massachusetts Republican Party.
Yes, there is.
Now, when the Massachusetts Republican, when they got together, did they get together in a?
We meet for coffee at Starbucks.
Yeah, I was just going to say there are about six people. That's about it. Also joining us this evening is Carol Felsenthal. She's one of the country's leading freelance journalists. She is the contributing editor of Chicago Magazine. She's written a number of books on a number of subjects, including Katherine Graham and Anne Roosevelt Longworth. Her latest book is called Clinton in Exile, A President Out of the White House, and she lives in the Chicagoland area, and also she is a frequent writer for the Huffington Post,
right.
And you're right on a variety of issues. Nick, you were about to make a point, and then we're going to go back to calls.
Yeah, I think that there are, Bruce, no shortage of examples across the country when it comes to ethical infractions on the part of our elected leaders, but there is one element to this discussion that I think often gets drowned out, and that is, you know, this level of, or maybe I should say the expectation that elected officials are going to agree with us as voters every time on every issue, and that's just simply unrealistic. I can tell you from my own experience in government that people, they change the tone when dealing with their public officials when they find that they disagree, and this country, in fact, is a representative democracy. We send our elected officials to state capitals, to Washington, to exercise independent judgment based on the facts. So I think there needs to be some consideration given to the fact that these are complex issues. Our elected officials aren't going to agree with us all the time, but disagreement by itself is not an ethical infraction. There are plenty of those good ones, and I know that they get all the press.
Now, why you were going through a long list, Jack, during the break about some of the ethical lapses, many of them because of a sexual nature,
right.
That the public has endured over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And the list is long, and it's bipartisan.
It's certainly. I was thinking about Governor Stafford from North Carolina. He used state funds to see his mistress in Argentina.
Still is the governor.
Still is the governor. Well, we had Elliot Spitzer who in New York and, you know, with the prostitution ring, and he stepped down almost immediately.
Right.
I thought he was honorable in how he handled that. I wish the other ones would have done it. We have, of course, our own Governor Blagojevich here in Illinois, mm-hmm. who's been impeached and soon will be on trial. And then we have the governor in New Jersey, McCreevy, who had his lover on the state payroll mm-hmm. and had to resign as well.
And now we have Max Baucus, one of the leading leaders of the Senate health care debate. His girlfriend, he wants to appoint as the U.S. attorney for his state.
And that's a striking example, Bruce. I mean, Senator Baucus, Carol, was saying it during the break, is a crucial player in this national health care debate. And the protocol for nominating candidates to be U.S. attorney is for a senior elected member of the president's political party to send a recommendation list to the White House. And in Senator Baucus's case, he sent a list to the White House without alerting them to a relationship that he had, a romantic relationship with one of the candidates on his list. She works for him. She was given a pay raise. She was taken with him on trips. I mean, this to me is a serious example of why people are skeptical about the process, and it has gotten very limited
nobody
coverage.
Nobody knows about it.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody knows. It's astonishing to me that journalists like me haven't made more of this scandal. It is a scandal, but it's just right under the radar, and it's so interesting the way the
Is it because many of the journalists are Democrats, and maybe they find it far more titillating to go after Mark Sanford? Although the Mark Sanford dalliances were pretty bizarre,
right?
I mean, this was an abuse of state funds. He was going out of the country. He was lying to everybody.
But a U.S. attorney is a very important position, and it shouldn't be tainted that way. And, you know, the governor of South Carolina was going to be a player as a possible nominee
right?
in 2012. He will never be that. So that's off the table. He's not involved in the health care debate. The health care debate is the debate, I think, of our generation.
But he wasn't impeached. And it was just interesting how they sort of backed off completely on this issue. You know,
he wasn't on tape saying it's bleeping golden and I want to sell the Senate seat to the highest bidder.
But where is the moral outrage, which leads to political outrage, which leads to forced political courage to force him out of office?
Baucus is a 70-something-year-old man. He's not.
I'm talking about Sanford in this particular case.
But Sanford was a big story. His wife was interviewed in Vogue magazine.
She's now filed for divorce, right?
Yeah, she's filed for divorce. But the Max Baucus thing, you have a 70-something-year-old man with a bad marriage that he got out of, and people just don't care. It just doesn't stick. Yeah, but the big one was to Wanda Baucus, and
it may be too early to find out what the ramifications are. But what you're saying is the level of ridicule, the level of what he was attempting to do, was far more egregious than what Mark Sanford was doing.
I definitely think so, because it was an abuse of his power for a public position. And when Harry Reid, the head of the U.S. Senate, is Senate Majority Leader. He's in a very, very tough reelection race in Nevada. He's way, way down. Now, do you think that anybody will bring up that what happened with Roland Burris and the seating of Roland Burris, which was a travesty? Nobody, if there's anybody in Nevada, but I'm talking about political junkies, people who write for the newspapers, who do the political shows, it won't even be brought up.
No, it's Roland Burris is yesterday's news. Most people. Let's go to Bob in Worcester, Mass, listening to us on WTAG. Go ahead.
Well, I'm a longtime listener of your show, and I admire the way you address all these different topics. I just wanted to comment on...
And by the way, WTAG is one of our oldest affiliates, and it's always nice to hear from New England.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment on a couple of things. I think, first of all, ethics in politics and business goes in waves, and I think in certain parts of the country there... The evidence that we're rooting out some of this negative behavior, I think, is very, very positive and speaks highly to the fact that we do have an ethical drive behind it. In Massachusetts, we're very fortunate. We have a Senate race going on to fill the Kennedy seat, and the two candidates, both Scott Brown and Martha Coakley particularly, really represent strong moral standards and strong ethical grounds, and we've recently gone through a period where the Speaker of the House in the last couple of rounds have been thrown out on ethical grounds. So we were living part of the same situation you have out in Chicago, but, we've overcome that. We've got some very strong political leaders, we're happy to say, so I just want to comment on that.
Okay, we have a man from Massachusetts. He wants to elaborate.
It's great to hear from somebody from the Bay State, Bob. Thanks for the call. I think that Senate race is very interesting. I think the governor's race that's shaping up in Massachusetts is equally interesting, where you have a challenger in Charlie Baker, who was a former advisor to Bill Weld, who espouses the utmost integrity, and Deval Patrick, who's the incumbent Democrat governor, while I disagree with almost everything that he's done, is an honorable man who's in it for the right reasons. So I think that there are some bright spots for sure, and we need to focus on those, even though they may not be as exciting to talk about.
From Worcester, Mass., let's go to Monterey, California, where Mark is listening to us on KION. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, Bruce, thanks very much. I was telling your producer off air that I think that it's still possible that we can have faith in our representatives and that they will do the right thing, because I can think of a couple of representatives in Congress that I believe are not for sale. They don't take lobbyist money. They are extremely principled in their stands. And that would be on the Republican side, Ron Paul from Texas, and on the Democrat side, Dennis Kucinich from Ohio. These are men who've proved that you can go to Washington, you can keep your principles, and you do not have to, sell yourself to the highest bidder. And I think what happens with so many of us, we see too many cases of William Jeffersons with 80 grand in the freezer, or the Mark Sanfords, or even going back to Spiro Agnew, taking bribe money in his office as governor of Maryland, and we look at it and we say, geez, they're all a bunch of rats, but they aren't necessarily all rats. There are at least a couple shiny examples of citizen statesmen, and what a representative in our republic is supposed to be, as opposed to the majority that we have out there.
Your reaction, Nick?
I think it's a great point. Now, I think we should take a step back for a minute and think about, to that extent, the pressure that good elected officials are under when they arrive in, say, state capitals or in Washington. there is a strong undercurrent of the way it's done, the business as usual. This is how Washington works. This is how the Capitol works. And to resist that, and there are many who do, is an honorable act of political courage, and we should I agree wholeheartedly. We should do a better job of rewarding
and,
it.
And even in a presidential campaign, I think if you look at the early debates, Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul made the early debates, I think, entertaining. Mm-hmm. They made them enlightening. And although the major media generally dismissed them, and after a while they didn't even include them in the debates, that's what primaries are all about. That's what debates are all about, to get those that might be viewed as the extreme element of a party. And what really makes them extreme is they say what's on their mind, they mean what they say, and they say what they mean. And some people may think they're a little bit wacky, but the reality is those are the people that I think that can broaden the base of the electorate, or else it's just going to have the control group that the Republican Party and the Democratic Party like to turn out, which is a small turnout, and the smaller the turnout, the more power they have to control who wins and who loses. The last thing they want is a political prairie fire. They had that in 1992 with Ross Perot, and it almost got them elected. Back shortly.
A car accident is bad enough, so that's why GEICO makes it easy to file a claim. You can do it online or over the phone. Then you go to geico.com to track your claim, view photos of the damage, or print an estimate. And for as long as you own your car, repairs are guaranteed when you use a GEICO-recommended repair shop. GEICO's easy-peasy, lemon-squeezy claim service, they call it. Okay, it's just me that calls it that.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
I need pain relief that won't mess with my grip.
The new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator. Powerful, targeted, long-lasting pain relief now in a roll-on applicator. No mess, just maximum strength medicine for back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. Massages in icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away.
Wherever I hurt, wherever I go.
Stop pain right at the source with the new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator.
No pain, no mess.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
From Andover, Maine to Poughkeepsie, New York, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. We're here every Sunday night taking calls on America's great talk radio stations, as well as Sirius and XM satellite radio. And Carol Felsenthal, you had a comment.
The last caller mentioned two congressmen who aren't bought and paid for, and one is the Democrat Dennis Kucinich, and the other is a Republican Ron Paul. And I thought it was a very interesting call because those two congressmen, they don't need to take money from lobbyists. They are national figures. You turn on any of the cable political talk shows, you will see one or the other of them. They're eccentric people with very fringe politics. And The Hill, which is a Washington Capitol Hill newspaper, very interesting paper, had a story on the most liked and the most disliked, and it was bipartisan. The like people were conservatives and liberals, yeah, and Democrats and Republicans. There were four most disliked, and Kucinich was one, and Ron Paul was the other. Came out a couple days
and
ago.
And they also get a lot of media exposure. Which,
oh, sure. They're national. Jealous. They're, yeah, national
a
figures.
Lot of jealousy.
And Ron,
who are the other four? Do you remember who the other two?
I don't.
Okay.
But I remember those two because they're national names. Mm-hmm. Ron Paul's son is running in Texas for a congressional seat. So
let us go to Susan in Chicago on WLS. You're on Coast to Coast.
Hi. A question about Barack Obama and ethics reform in Illinois. About a couple of years ago, I called into your show and asked an Obama spokesman why he was qualified to run for higher office for the presidency. And the spokesman mentioned his reaching across the aisle for ethics reform in Illinois. Did anyone challenge him on this?
Jack, you worked with him.
Yeah. I think he did everything right, you know, in Illinois. I worked well with Barack Obama. I thought he was an outstanding state senator.
Where was the ethics reform? I mean, that was followed up with impeachment of our governor.
Well, that was well after.
Yeah, that was long after.
Was well after he had left.
What was the ethics that he was responsible
I'm not
for?
I'm not sure. I recall which bill.
I have a question, Susan. Thanks very much for your call. I have a question on the issue of whether this is ethics or not. There's a lot of people who are listening and watching the show this evening, and they went out and they signed petitions. They circulated petitions for Barack Obama. They rang doorbells in Iowa. They went to New Hampshire. They thought this guy, maybe this was the first campaign they ever worked on. They liked him because he was against the Iraq War. They thought he was more liberal than Hillary Clinton, and they were ecstatic. They thrust him to Denver. They thrust him into the White House. They were out celebrating at Grant Park. They were crying the night that he was elected. They did all these things because they believed in him. They thought that he was different. He was a new guy. He was change they could believe in. Now, he goes to Oslo and gives the speech that he gave, which many conservatives cheered, as we know. He gave the speech at West Point, where he added 30,000 more troops. The war in Iraq is not over yet, although it is allegedly winding down. But when he said his first day in office, his first order was going to be look for a way to get it done, I don't think anybody necessarily believes that. He said he wants to close Guantanamo, but it's not closed yet. He made promises to the gay and lesbian community. They're not happy that he's doing what they thought he would do. And so my question is that an ethical lapse? I mean, should they feel that Barack Obama was not ethical, or is he just like every other politician? How should they react? Where does that sense fit into the issue of ethics, or does it not at all?
At all. I think it's a question of reality. He's been there, quite frankly, less than a year. He was sworn in January 20th of this year. He hasn't even been there 11 months. Give the guy a break, you know? Maybe it was worse than he actually thought it was. After he got in, it might have been tougher, and it has been. I mean, Saturday Night Live had a pretty stinging rebuke last month of all the things he hadn't accomplished.
That's right.
And they were right. But you know what? It isn't over yet. He's got some time, and I think there's a lot of ways to get to
the... But should they be out... I mean, if a politician says one thing, and then when they get elected, they don't do it...
Well, you can try.
Does that mean that they're smarter? Does it mean that they put one over on all these people? I mean, because some people, I would say, wait a minute, this guy lied to me.
I don't think he lied.
Well...
He was just, as you say, he was realistic. If he had given his Oslo speech in Iowa during the caucuses, he would not have – John Edwards probably. John Edwards came in second. John Edwards probably would have won the caucuses.
And wouldn't Hillary that have been great for the Republican Party?
Right, and Hillary, and Hillary would have come in second. So Barack Obama suits his speech – for his audience.
But is that ethical?
Yeah, let me get what I think to the you know the gist of what you're trying to get at, Bruce.
Kucinich was ethical. Kucinich
didn't
get elected.
He's never going to be president.
I don't know that it was unethical, but I'll tell you this. It was discouraging. And the point that I made about then-Senator Obama's campaign the entire time he was running it is that it was oversimplification of the complexities of what he would accomplish. You cannot run for president, or should not, maybe I should rephrase, on soaring rhetorical themes of change that convince people that you're going to, you know, completely turn the system upside down. If you have any reasonable working knowledge of how things are, as Jack said, it takes time. He never showed the candor that you would hope for from somebody seeking the presidency, and now his numbers show that he's paying for it.
Did Ronald Reagan do that? When Ronald Reagan said that we're going to lower the deficit and we're going to build up the military and we're going to reduce taxes, was that being fair to the American people?
I think he did all those things.
Or was it an example of a politician saying what people wanted to hear?
A new kind of politics?
In a Republican perspective. You don't see any difference there.
Well, maybe, but if it's truly a new kind of politics, then even if it was the same thing as Ronald Reagan, and I'm not saying that it was, maybe it shouldn't have been.
Okay. Read my lips, no new taxes from H.W. Bush. Clinton was going to be much less a triangulator, much more of a left-wing president. George W. Bush was going to be a humble foreign policy president.
Right. On that note, we have to say farewell to Jack Franks, our Democrat, Carol Felsenthal, our reporter, and Nick Zitzen, our Republican. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Tom Veracruz and Ben Stewart helped make this program possible. Until next week, good night from Chicago.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
I'm sorry, emergency.
Yeah, we're going to need an ambulance out here. I'm in a real bad accident here.
All right, sir. I'm contacting the 911 center.
In a crash, an OnStar advisor can automatically receive an alert.
911.
This is OnStar emergency. I have a vehicle crash airbag deployment at Swan Lake Road. They are saying there are injuries. I'll conference you in.
Who is injured?
Oh, I don't know. My knees are broken. That's a hell of a wreck.
Dispatch, I'm showing the maximum reported delta V was 18 miles per hour from the front.
Okay, thank you. We have an ambulance and first responders on the way.
With built-in automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can use GPS technology to locate you and share crash details, which could help save your life.
The ambulance is here.
I do hope everything will be okay with you, sir.
Okay.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
It's quite a proposition when you think about it. You contact GEICO and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. 15 minutes, simple as that. Something they've been doing for over 70 years. You want car insurance and you want extra money in your wallet, done and done. Now, not only do you have some nice car insurance, you've got plenty of money to spend on some tasty biscuits. Or flowers for your mum. Or whatever it is you fancy.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Announcing the Ally Bank online savings account with a rate that's among the most competitive in the country. If you're waiting for the terms and conditions, forget about it. It really is that straightforward. Nothing confusing, hazy, ambiguous, dubious, or dodgy. No double dealing, double speak, or double meanings. Just an online savings account with a great rate. Compare rates for yourself at allybank.com or call Ally at 877-247-ALLY. Ally, straightforward. Member FDIC.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
I need pain relief that won't mess with my grip.
The new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator. Powerful, targeted, long-lasting pain relief now in a roll-on applicator. No mess. Just maximum strength medicine for back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. Massages in icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away.
Wherever I hurt, wherever I go.
Stop pain right at the source with the new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator.
No pain, no mess.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
Why do cold temperatures make for such warm memories? Find out at REI. We have all the latest gear, cold weather clothing, and advice to help you make the most of this winter and holiday season. With a wide selection of gear and apparel for camping, cycling, hiking, skiing, and snowboarding, we'll help you and your family and friends get outside and make some fun winter memories. You'll find plenty of great gift ideas, too. As always, everything is backed by our 100% satisfaction guarantee. Visit your local REI store or REI.com. REI. Find out.